I'll start off by acknowledging my co-authors on this paper, Asim Biswas, Bingcheng Si, and Lee Barber. And I hope you were lucky enough yesterday to see Asim's talk. It was a really, really interesting talk about a new method that I'm going to be applying here today. And the Pyrotechnic show was fantastic. It was definitely worth coming for. So the oil sands in northern Canada, northern Alberta specifically, are responsible for a large output of bitumen production and crude oil output over a million barrels a day. But most of the production comes from open pit mining. 20% comes from open pit mining, and this is usually the ore is about 30 meters below ground surface. So it disturbs a large area of land, roughly 1,200 square kilometers. And the companies are mandated by the government to reclaim these areas to original capability. And often, in many cases, the way they do this is by using a reclamation soil cover. So for upland reclamation, what they use in this sort of climate is known as a store and release cover. So this is where water that comes in through precipitation is stored in the soil matrix until it can be used later by plants and taken out of the cover. So in this way, the amount of water that is allowed to percolate below the cover into the waste is limited, as well as the amount of waste materials that are below the cover can't come back up and ruin the integrity of the cover. So the overall efficacy of the cover depends on the dynamics of water and temperature within the cover, and these will respond to climatic forcing. That's ultimately what's driving this. So we need to know just how responsive these covers actually are, and specifically know the time scales of variation within this. It's important. It'll help us understand the mechanisms that are governing performance, specifically something like runoff or percolation. That's usually what we're interested in is the percolation below the cover. But it also helps us guide modeling efficiency and how we interpret long-term trends as the cover develops. But when we're looking at this, there's a number of analysis issues that come up. And the ones that I'm concerned about are known as non-stationarity. So if we have a time series of a soil property, and if there's a trend in that data, different areas of that series will have different means and variances. As well, there's the issue of non-linearity. And this is something, if we take a soil property like water storage and a process such as vegetation, we can fairly accurately estimate what the water storage is going to look like. And then if we have something like topography and water storage, we know how those will behave. But the addition of the two doesn't always add up to what we would expect to see if the two were superimposed. So this is known as non-linearity, and this is another analysis issue that we need to take into account. And the way that we've been doing this, or starting to do this, is by using the Hilbert-Wang transform. And it's a two-part analysis, first using the empirical mode decomposition, where the specific scales of variance are sifted out, and then followed by Hilbert spectral analysis. And the reason that I like this is because it's intuitive. It makes sense, and hopefully it will when you take a look at it as well. But it works directly from the data. It's adaptive. It doesn't have any theoretical basis. So it really is a data-driven technique. So the objective of the study here was to look at the time scales of variation in water content in a reclamation soil cover using the Hilbert-Wang transform, and I'm going to use a case study from the oil sands to demonstrate the technique. So the climate at the site is classed as subhuman continental, and of the precipitation that falls during the year, 342 mils of that falls as rain. It's a cold site, cold in the winter, warm in the summer. And the cover was composed of, at the surface, a 20 centimeter layer of a peat mineral mix, overlying 100 centimeters of a fine textured glacial till, over a saline sodic overburden shale. So this is the waste that we're concerned about. These covers are heavily instrumented, but the one that I'm concerned about is water content. So there was water content sensors in the peat mineral mix at 5 and 15 centimeters. In the glacial till, sensors at 25, 40, and 115. And then in the overburden at 125. So keep in mind that sensor is right below the interface. So that's going to show us what's happening immediately below the cover. Data was collected continuously from 2003 to 2009, every 6 hours, and is complemented with hourly and daily meteorological data. So to explain empirical mode decomposition, if you can imagine a data series like this, and there's the variability associated with that, what you do is you take the local maxima and join those with a spline curve. Take the local minima, join that with a spline curve so that you've got an envelope in the data, and then take the local mean within that. And then what you do is you take that mean and subtract that from the original data series, and what you're left with is an intrinsic mode function. And so then the process carries on again. You develop your envelope and get your mean, take that away from the data, and then eventually you're sifting out longer and longer timescales of variability until eventually you're left with just a residue from the data. Following that, you take your intrinsic mode functions, apply the Hilbert-Wang transform, where the important thing here is that you get instantaneous amplitude and instantaneous frequency, and that energy as a function of space and frequency is shown in the Hilbert spectrum. So to demonstrate this, we'll look at water content from 5 centimeters. So this is right at the surface in the peat mineral mix layer. On the left axis is water content, and on the right axis is precipitation. So this is a section of the data. It's frost-free data for 1 year. So this is what the Hilbert spectra looks like, and on the left axis you can see that scale is decreasing as we go down, meaning that its higher frequency processes are further down here. Red indicates higher variance within this spectrum. And this is what the precipitation for this spectra looks like. And then you can see that it can be partitioned into discrete bands. At a scale of about a day and a half to 2 days, we have, this is associated with precipitation events of less than 10 millimeters or even drying events. The second band is at a scale of 12 hours, and this is associated with precipitation events of 10 to 20 millimeters. And then the big events, 30 to 70 millimeters, these are the ones that produce the highest frequency response, so 6 hours, which is one measurement interval. So it takes the big storms for the sensors to respond near the surface. Okay, so that was the very small scale processes. Now let's take a look at the longer scale, and we'll do that by using the entire data set here. So we have water content again for 5 centimeters, 40 centimeters, and 125 centimeters. So what you can do when you separate out these IMFs is you can calculate their contribution to the total variance and the scale associated with that. So right at the surface for 5 centimeters, we have a scale of 290 days, which we'll say is roughly a year, but it's only contributing 24% of the variance to the total. And so what we're seeing here is that there's high variability at the surface layer, and that variability remains roughly consistent as we're going along. But then go down to 40 centimeters, you can see that the maximum contribution to the total variance increases to 37%, and it's associated with a time scale of 171 days, so roughly half a year. And this is half a year as in the frost-free period and the frozen period. But the thing to notice here is that there's decreasing variability in the water content as we go along. So initially there was a high variability, and then it damps out as the cover develops somewhere in 2005. And we're seeing that again in at 125 centimeters. So again, roughly half a year scale is contributing the maximum amount of variation. And we're up from, we saw it was 24% at 5 centimeters, but now it's 43% at 125 centimeters. And again, a lot of variation early on, but then that damps out as the cover develops. So what this means is that there's less water that's getting through that cover and is actually reaching that waste. And the reason that we're seeing this is because of the vegetation that's developing at the site. Starting in 2006, you can see that the cover was dominated by grasses and shrubs, and trees weren't growing very, very robustly. But then as we go along 2007, the grasses are starting to get a lot bigger, the trees are developing, and then in 2009, you can see that species like aspen takes over, and we've got a lot of really rich, highly productive vegetation that's taking out a lot of water from this cover. So we can see that the performance of these covers is completely dictated by the variability within them, and we can separate that out into different time scales. At the small scale, you saw that there was certain thresholds for different precipitation events, and then at the large scale, over a year or half years, there was a variability that decreased that was associated with vegetation. So this is important because at the small scale, this can help guide how we set up our models, whether the modeling time steps are too small or too large, and we can kind of balance that with computational efficiency. Also the sampling frequency of our data loggers, when we should be taking measurements. But the thing that I'm getting out of the 5 centimeter data was that there's no single dominant process that's happening at the surface layer. And then turning to the large scale, we can take a look at the long-term development of the cover. We saw that the variability was damped out, and this was, again, due to the vegetation. So really, if you want your cover to perform, vegetation is critical for these things. So it was through an analysis of the time scales involved with water content at this site that we can really get a better understanding of the performances that are governing the performance. Oop. Well, my funding partners, if I hadn't clicked right past them, were NSERC. All right. I'll blow right by it again. There we go. NSERC, O'Kane Consultants in Saskatoon, and the University of Saskatchewan. So I'll take any questions.
Were you interested in spatial variability also as well as temporal variation?
Yes, but not for this study. The way that this is one of this site's first reclamation projects, and they have different cover treatments, but there's really only one major monitoring system at each, so you can't really get a sense of spatial variability. So there's that issue. But there's also not a lot of people look at the temporal variability, and so I thought that was kind of interesting and a useful way to look at this new method.
How many ramifications did you have with what you showed?
There's just one for each treatment, or like for the actual cover treatments or for the monitoring stations.
Monitoring station.
There's just one for each cover.
Okay.